Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to My Dad Wrote a Porno, The Footnotes. I've got James and Alice with me.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, guys. And today we are joined by one of our greatest actors. You know, he's the star of The Queen, Midnight in Paris, Frost Nixon, Masters of Sex. But I think we'll all agree his greatest role is that of a fully fledged Belinker. It's Michael Sheen.
Hello, 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 hello.
This How is are so you? Nice.
Oh, you went all serious when you said hello.
Oh, hello.
Hello. It was like University Challenge. Levine.
Hello. Did you not get the memo? We were all supposed to do a really... This is the whole thing is supposed to be serious.
Is it?
It's just gone awry with every other episode.
It's gone very awry.
Rocky intended it to be serious. That's the worst thing.
Well, yeah.
Do you think he really did not in any way intend it to be funny?
Having had conversations with him since... No, honestly. Right. And he's like, what did you think of this? And we're like, mental. Genuinely mental.
Now, this is a question I wanted to ask you. Did he write book two after the podcast had started?
No. So he wrote...
before.
Yeah, so he wrote four books before...
Because I would have sworn that he was now writing influenced by the podcast.
Oh, do you think?
I'm sure that Jim Sterling cliffhanger is as a result of everything you said in the first book. But it's not. You don't
know. No. Well, he kind of... When he first sent me the book, or the pages, I should say, of the first three chapters...
The tattered pages.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, okay, it's great. Like, you know, write it. And he's like, I've already written four. By the time it took me to read the three chapters, he'd written four books. So he's very much
he's like,
written
I can't
them.
Wait around for your approval. They're written. Yeah,
he's like exactly. The prince of erotic fiction.
He really is.
Just like knocking them out. It's like the muse, like the Mozart. Just comes. He's a vessel from
he's
the
a prodigy.
Heavens.
He really is.
It does
is.
Feel like that. Because a vessel suggests you have like no input. And it does just kind of fall out of
dribbles
his body.
Out of him. It comes through him like a terrible case of the trolls.
It really does. That's the best analogy yeah. So far. That's very accurate.
It doesn't even touch the sides when it comes out.
It really doesn't.
But yeah, there's four pure, we call them the pure books.
Yeah, yeah.
The untouched books.
It's like in hundreds or thousands of years' time when people have created a religion around it, they'll be looking back and be talking about the four pure and then the apocryphal. Yeah.
This is the Old Testament.
The Belinda blinked apocrypha. Yeah. But these four pure ones, this is what they base the inner circle of the religion around.
So how did you first discover the podcast?
I was trying to think about this because I anticipated that you would ask me that.
Oh, really? You bought it on Kindle, didn't you?
I did.
You came to it before the podcast.
No, I did. I wish.
You
I
are
wish
a lover
I'd
of literature, so.
I was wandering past a gazebo and I noticed a man scribbling furiously. And I thought, I wonder. No, I think it was one of your previous guests on Footnotes. I think it was Rachel Bloom.
Right.
Who I heard on another podcast called Script Notes, which is about screenwriting.
Yes.
And they do a thing at the end, which is one cool thing. And her one cool thing when she was a guest on it was this.
Oh. No.
That sounds interesting.
That sounds ridiculous.
Have a listen to that. Anything to do with your dad doing something that is embarrassing? Because I feel like we have a connection.
Oh, okay, go.
Because my dad didn't write a porno, but my dad, for many years, was a professional Jack Nicholson lookalike.
Wow.
I mean, what good?
If I had a pound for the number of times someone had said that to
but
me.
Guys, a professional,
yeah.
At
yeah,
least.
Professional.
So he was good.
Well, he got paid. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It started when the first Tim Burton Batman film came out. And literally overnight, and Jack Nicholson played the Joker, and overnight people started coming up to my dad in the street and going, "You don't half look like that Jack Nicholson."
Oh my God.
And my dad didn't know who he was. My dad thought it was the golfer, Jack Nicholas. So it didn't really make much of it. And then, and it happened more. So you must have like just...
started wearing Pringle jumpers. Yeah, yeah.
Very loud trousers. And then there was a big competition in the newspaper saying, "Do you look like the Joker?" And my dad said, "Well, I think I should have a go. Everyone says I look like it, so I should have a try. So will you take some pictures of me?" So I had to take photographs of him, and he sent him in, and he won the competition. Oh. And then when Batman was in our local cinema, he got a job. His first paid job as Jack was to stand in the not in the Joker outfit, in the kind of the pre-Joker element, like a hat and coat and everything.
The mafia
outside
thing.
In the lobby of the cinema, as if he was a statue. And as, because in those days there were still crowds outside coming in, and as the queue came along, every kind of 5 minutes he would jump out at someone and shock them and then go back to it. And apparently he said that he saw down in the line a guy that he used to work with called Dave something, and he waited for Dave to come along, and then he went, "Dave Smith!" And it frightened the shit out of him. Anyway, so that was how it started. And then for years and years and years, he was doing it. Now, that's for me, amazing. It did cause me quite a lot of embarrassment. So I feel like there is a slight connection there.
I've only got myself to blame, though, really. I'm the one who's made this a thing. I could have just sat on this and never told anyone.
It's true.
Would have been embarrassing, but just for myself. But
it's sort of like therapy, though.
It really is. It's group therapy.
If you hadn't have done this podcast, you'd have been on top of Tesco's with a gun.
Absolutely.
Picking off stragglers. Thank God. I think the world owes you.
Thank God.
And this podcast gratitude.
Crisis averted.
You're welcome, guys.
Yeah. Out of interest then, did you get teased about him being Jack?
No. But no, this, because I was already in drama school.
Oh, fine.
So it was quite late on.
I was 32.
Yeah. I wish I'd still been in school, but no, I was 21, I think.
Okay. So it was cool, but.
Yeah, so I kind of liked it and was embarrassed by it at the same time.
Has he met Jack?
Well, he's had the opportunity to quite a few times. A lot of people have got in touch with him and said, "We'd like to get you to step out onto the red carpet when Jack is, you know, when Jack's over for a film in Leicester Square." When I remember my dad was telling me this, someone has been in touch, my girl. They want me to go and stand on the red carpet. I said, "What are you going to do, Dad?" He said, "Oh, I don't know. I'm going to have a think about it. And then I called him up the next week and I said, "Have you decided, Dad?" He said, yes, "I'm not doing it. It's Jack's night." She's very sweet.
So nice.
Very sweet.
Oh, I don't want to spoil it for
But him. He's done a lot of that kind of thing.
So he's kind of the preeminent Jack Nicholson lookalike in the world.
He doesn't do it so much anymore.
Okay.
And there was an American one who was very good as well. His kind of arch nemesis. But when my dad comes to visit me in America, he does love to go around with an LA Lakers hat on and sunglasses. And, he hopes that no one will recognize him. My mum is constantly having to go, "Yes, I'll take a picture of you."
Just don't talk. Don't talk.
I really want to see a picture of your dad now.
Google it.
You can Google it.
Google Myrick Sheen.
Myrick Sheen.
M-E-Y-R-I-C-K Sheen. And it will come up. There he is. There you go.
That is very good, actually. Bad, I have to say.
Yeah.
This picture has got them alongside each other, so you can see
who's
who.
Tell which is which.
He got headshots and everything. He did it properly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. My.
Funnily enough, when I was still at drama school, my dad was down in London doing a job, doing
she
a Jack Nicholson
no
job.
Who the real one is.
Generally don't know.
Is he a sportsman?
he reads East Midlands Today, I think. Wonderful.
And I came down to meet him. He was doing some job somewhere, a Jack job. And I met him and he said, tomorrow I have to go into my agent's whilst I'm down here in London. And I said, do you want to come with me? And I said, yeah, all right. So I went in with him and I was just sort of sitting there whilst he was doing whatever he had to do. And by the end of it, I could see the agent looking at me. And I realised, of course, lookalike agents see the whole world through the possibility of who you could be.
You were being scouted.
Yeah, and as I was leaving, she just went, "James Dean." Which was, flattering,
yes.
But still.
Well,
no, I don't think
that
so.
He's been dead for 17 years.
Yeah. Post-car crash, James Dean.
Not much call for a...
Yeah. And then just the other day, when on Twitter they suggest people you can follow and stuff? The agent was suggested.
No.
Yeah. So I followed her, and then I got a message from her just like yesterday going, "Oh, how lovely to hear from you, Michael."
We haven't found you any work.
We've still got James Dean on the go. She said if you want to do some James Dean. Come on, this was like last week.
Oh my I God, love
brilliant.
That.
So good.
And I presume you are.
Of course, yeah. That's why I'm here.
That's what you're in town for.
I'm not just here for the Cheshire One Act Festival.
Oh.
You'll have to fight Jamie for that award.
Honestly, I mean, I can't wait to go back.
Actors like us, Jamie.
It's a dog's life, isn't it?
It really is.
We're huffers. I mean,
it's all right. I came over VIP on the plane.
Oh, I'm very
Cheshire
much.
One Act Festival paid for it. I was very lucky.
But did you find B1 or B2?
I was in B3.
Of course you were.
I was.
With who? Yeah.
Or on your own? Me and both pilots. Isn't that amazing? I'm going looking for the spiral staircase.
Oh my goodness. I imagine it to be, you know, like beautiful antique fretwork. It's not going to be practical. It'll be ornate, obviously.
When I did Frost Nixon and we did the scene on the aeroplane, I'm sure they had a spiral staircase in the aeroplane.
Really?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, in the 70s, I reckon they did. They had spiral staircases.
Oh, well, that was the last time my dad travelled, so that makes sense.
It does feel like both books, do feel like they're set in the 70s.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it just takes a real swerve and someone's cervix gets grabbed.
Yeah.
Or anytime you say the word tits, I have to say, I just go, no! Not that there's anything wrong with tits, but I want to hear breasts.
Yeah.
Or boobs even.
Yeah, even a boob.
So we're coming to the end of book two.
And hasn't it been long?
Oh, God.
I mean, I feel like we've been doing book two forever.
What did you say when you arrived? What were you doing before you came in?
So I got here a little bit early and I've been catching up. And so I just listened to the last episode, which was the Texas USA episode. Mm. And there was still about 15 minutes to go. So I thought, I'm not going in until I've heard this. And so I went walking. It's black as pitch out there.
It really is.
And cold. And I went
it's
walking.
It's not a nice neighbourhood either,
James. No, I know. It's very sketchy around here, clearly. I don't know who you're hanging out with. And I went walking, like, for miles. Listening, and then just as I was coming back, I timed it so I would come back just in time. And as I got halfway up your road, it got to the end, and the cliffhanger, and Belinda's crying, and Jim is like, and I screamed in the middle of the road. I don't mind telling you, I did a girly scream in the middle of the road. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Sorry. So when I got to the door, my heart was still pumping when I was saying hello to you.
You were buzzed.
I was on a buzz.
Did you? I've never said, but the road parallel to this one is called Perv's Road.
Is it?
Yeah. So you were walking down Perv's Road.
I did actually walk down Perv's Road. And I was worried because because there are a lot of people coming from the tube station. There's a tube station on the other side. And there were a lot of people walking up from the tube
Excellent
station.
Excellent transport links.
Very good. And so I was doing a weird thing because I wasn't actually going anywhere. So I was walking like down the road a little bit and then coming back down. And I think women coming from the tube station thought I was a perv, like following
that's
them.
That's textbook perv behaviour.
Yeah.
Especially in that Helga jumper you've got there.
How dare you? How very dare you?
It's about 20 degrees outside and I would say that's like Arctic wear.
It is.
Even for me, I mean, I can't talk.
I'm not stripping it. I've only got a black thong on underneath with a little bit of red piping.
You keep that right where it is. That's fine.
I do want to ask about the time thing of it, because how long have you actually been doing these podcasts in real lifetime?
In real life?
A year.
We celebrated our year birthday three days ago.
But in the story, it's 4 weeks has passed.
Yes.
Yeah, she hasn't even been paid
yet. She hasn't been paid once.
None of it's worth it.
She's just living on her redundancy from her last job.
So peculiar that.
Yeah.
It's all happened so quickly.
It's so unusual.
Because I know you've asked, I'm going to preempt questions here. I know you're going to ask where you want the story to go, because I've heard you saying that to other people. And so I'm already...
So predictable. Yeah.
So let's not mess around.
How was it being in Star Wars? We just ask all the same questions. Yeah.
Should we just leave you here with a mic?
Yeah.
Do a monologue and we'll go.
Because I want to see Belinda in different time periods. I want to see her in like Victorian times Jane Austen times and that kind of thing. So
do
maybe
you though?
Yes, I really do. Yeah, yeah. I think it would be amazing to see how she deals with all that and the airs
Belinda
and
in the Regency period.
Yeah.
Oh my
so
God.
Maybe she can like, because there is an element of Bond, I think.
Very much. Stories. A huge influence
the
of
Finster. Exotic. I figured. Because that's the 70s. Roger Moore must have been
very
in Bond,
much
I bet.
It's Octopussy.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe a bit of Moonraker.
So I feel like at some point, Belinda will be led into a room at Steel's Pots and Pans. And it will be like the equivalent of Q.
Oh.
And they've been working on a time machine. And off Belinda goes.
This is a genius.
I mean, I loved when you got all Tarantino. And kind of we went back to the barbecue. And we were seeing, it's like when John Travolta comes out of the bathroom in Pulp Fiction.
I mean, I think you underestimate what Rocky is actually up to here.
What I'm quite agitated about is the fact that we're getting to the end of book two and literally nothing has happened. She's gone to, like, finalise deals that she'd already done in book one.
Yeah.
She's made no business progress as far as I'm concerned. Jamie's shaking his head.
This is where I feel I have to defend my father because, he has got a long and admittedly checkered history in business. But I do think that he knows what he's talking about, James. You've never worked in business.
One of the chapters was her getting in a car,
yes,
walking into a building and walking into a meeting room. That was a chapter.
You know, there was an award-winning novel that was just, the entire novel was the space of time it took for a man to come down an escalator.
No.
So,
it's like
careful.
Andy Warhol's movie Empire.
Indeed.
Just a shot of the Empire State Building for like 10 hours or whatever.
Yeah. We're talking high art.
Yeah.
That's not
you
music.
You can't see it, James.
God.
It's not our problem.
Alice, back me up here.
I don't know. They've got a really strong argument.
She's such a turncoat.
Talking of the classics.
Yeah.
I think there is an argument to be made that there are similarities between your father's work and Hamlet. Hear me out. I'm just going to let you speak.
What a deep breath that was.
Yeah. So there have been some great works of literature, theatrical literature, such as Hamlet, such as Look Back in Anger by John Osborne, that were written in a rush, in a feverish rush.
Right. Okay.
John Osborne apparently wrote Look Back in Anger in a week. It just poured out.
Yeah.
Hamlet, I believe Shakespeare wrote in a kind of a frenzy. Okay. And it's almost like they put so much into it so quickly that they're not in control of what goes in there. So people have talked about Hamlet. T.S. Eliot, the famous poet, once criticised Hamlet as being certainly a failure of a play because technically it doesn't hold together. The timelines are all messed up.
Oh.
Does that ring a bell?
Yes.
Things seem to take much longer than they actually do in real time or shorter. You're never quite sure of the geography of anywhere. It's all a bit like a dream. Does that ring a bell?
Oh my God.
And there are certain moments in it where you question the reality of what's going on even. So I would like to say that I think, Rocky does write these very quickly, we know. People tend to underestimate the power of the work. But I believe great pieces of literature have been written in this way.
Have you just compared Rocky to Shakespeare?
Yes, I have.
Wow.
But James, both pieces have got iconic lines, to be or not to be, and The Flesh of Mankind.
The Flesh of Mankind. I mean, oh, what a piece of work is man, and The Flesh of Mankind. I mean, it could be, if you said to someone, where does The Flesh of Mankind come from? I bet one out of three would say Hamlet.
That's got a taste of Hamlet. Wow.
I don't want to walk into museums in years to come and, like, The Flesh of Mankind is written on the wall in, like, italic writing.
This is my greatest fear, that actually it's a genuine piece of literature, a milestone of the medium. I'm terrified.
Yeah, if Federico Fellini, the great Italian master filmmaker, was still alive, he would do such an extraordinary job of this film.
Do you know what? 8.5 is, it's similar.
Yeah.
Michael, you have to stop.
I can't stop. It's like a cross between Fellini and Lynch. With
you're only encouraging him.
With some Lindsay Anderson thrown in. I can't stop. It's just delicious.
And just a touch of Tommy Wiseau.
Something else that I do love about this show that occurred to me earlier on was that I love how outraged you get, Alice, at times. Because I'm like that. I love the fact that one episode of this ended with you just going, fuck off! That was the greatest end to anything I've ever heard.
I do get absolutely furious, but I think with Ground.
That's what she says to us every time we stop recording. She's just like, fuck off, I'm going home. What another waste of a fucking evening.
Alice is such a Bella, she is. She's the Bella of our group.
I feel like after you spoke to Muddy Ditch Middlemarch, Bella took a weird turn. I feel like you were influenced by him doing his Essex girl thing. And now Bella
has
just...
Her voice completely changed, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy kind of disassociating as much as I can from the book. So me kind of creating different personas takes it even further away from Dad. So that's kind of my rationale.
I see, yes.
But also, I am terrible at accents, as you know. So,
and yet, very confident about going into them on the podcast.
It's that Cheshire One Night Festival. It lives with me.
I see a bit of my dad in you.
Oh, God.
Do you see Jamie as a father figure?
I do.
So weird.
I do.
It's like a weird circle. Everyone's connected.
You're like my mother and father and my weird uncle.
Can I quickly ask about the Cheshire One Night
One act.
The Cheshire One Night Stand. That's a whole other anecdote.
It's a week-long engagement, thank you very much.
My apologies. So that's where you won for what?
I didn't actually win. I was nominated for Best Actor in a Leading Role.
Yes.
For
Toad of Toad Hall. Poop,
exactly.
And does it still run to this day?
It does.
Still...
I Googled it afterwards. It does still
run. Does it run? I'm there tomorrow. That's why I'm here.
Michael, you told you.
Do you not listen?
Are you nommed or are you doing the announcement?
I'm not nommed yet. I dream of being nommed.
The only way to be nommed is to go, Alice.
Oh,
they
right.
they still talk about Jamie's toad.
Do they? I bet they do. Is it like the fall?
It's like at the end of any performance, if people like it, the whole audience go, poo, 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 poo.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My first line ever, in anything ever, was in The Wizard of Oz. I was Farmer Munchkin. I had one line, and it was, Zoom!
Not a line.
Yeah, not really a line.
Yes, it is. I made it into a line. I extended it into a line.
Carriage return. You're like, yes.
Yeah. First line ever.
You owned it, though. That was nice.
I certainly did. They still talk about my Zoom and Jamie's poop.
I mean, it really is. It's one for the ages.
You haven't gone back to it, though, Jamie.
Funny that. I think this podcast has proved why.
I love that you did Toad of Toad Hall. That was your last stage performance. And then Porno Live. That's your character. Yeah.
No, I very much left it in Manchester.
I heard you left it all on the stage.
I did. I just couldn't continue. Mm. And I had to just walk away.
And what about your butcher in Oliver?
Thank you, yeah. That's talked about less, but I feel like it's maybe a more cult performance. This sounds quite mainstream, but mine was more of a...
You saying that Jamie sold out?
I don't know. I just feel like sometimes you should hold out for the role that's meant for you.
I'm just a whore for awards, right?
Clearly.
I, too, when I was very young, was in Oliver.
Go on.
This was before I'd made my mark on the theatrical world. So I didn't play Oliver or the Artful Dodger. Yeah,
but I think they're obvious choices.
Yeah, exactly. Who wants to play those? I interpreted the role of Dick.
Excuse me?
Dick Wilkins.
Yes.
Betty Wilkes is like
Betty Wilkes. Betty Wilkes does sound like she should be on Corrie. Yeah. You said, I can't remember what you said, you sort of talked about Betty Wilkes and Vicky Woods as being something, I can't remember what like reference you made to them, but I was thinking, surely it's Coronation Street, Betty Wilkes.
Oh no, we weren't allowed to watch the soaps as children. Parents are very against the soaps.
I think Rocky could easily slip into writing for Corrie or EastEnders.
Yeah. Oh, at least Hollyoaks.
Maybe Emmerdale. But definitely, he's definitely got
He has the bill in him, I think.
R.I.P.
Oh, well, is it not on anymore?
Doctors, it's
not on
anymore. What about Doctors? On the daytime one.
Oh, is that still on?
What was the one that was set on the Costa del Sol?
Oh, yeah.
El Dorado.
If only El Dorado was still going.
Oh, my God, we should do that. Bring back El Dorado, written by Rocky Flintstone. Yeah. Will you be in it? God.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's another thing about bloody Middlemarch Muddy Ditch, is that he took the part that I wanted to play.
Oh, no, did you want to be Dr. Robbins?
Yes.
Oh, of course you did.
With his girlish giggle and his hopping from one leg to the other.
Well,
and
someone sent us a clip from you in Twilight.
Well, I was going to say, I've already done it.
No! Kind of,
I've done it already.
Yeah, so really, you don't be typecast. You can't play it again. Right. Come on.
Think I know. Well, I did think about it.
Your career.
All right, if I can't play that, then... How about Cedric?
Ah, that's a great choice.
Thank you.
We don't actually... Do we know Cedric's exact age? We don't. We just know he's...
No, he's in his 80s, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I think he should be like 200 or something. Yeah, those biblical people like Methuselah. He's 580. Yeah. He should be really, really old.
Yeah, I think he was born BC. Yeah. I think that's fair to say. Yeah.
BC 4.
But he's challenging. He doesn't have a lot of dialogue, but he's a challenging role.
But it's a good character part.
It's a great character. I enjoy
playing him. Very scene-stealing, I think.
Yeah.
Even in this
array of motley characters.
You in the lift, I mean, that could be your moment.
Yeah.
That's your Oscar moment.
Definitely. Definitely. I sort of imagine him like the creatures in Gringotts in Harry.
Yes, very much so.
Because I know that Foster's does feel like very Harry Potter, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's all those little strange goblin-like creatures.
Yeah, goblins. Yes. They are, yeah.
So I sort of see Cedric like that.
Why does everyone want to play older? Like, Daisy wanted to play the Duchess. Tony, maybe?
Well,
it's a rubbish part, though, Tony. Yeah. He doesn't do anything.
Who have you got for... not that I'm saying I want to play this, but who have you got for Peter Rose?
No one's claimed Peter. No one's claimed.
We do need somebody for Peter, though, that feels confident doing sex scenes. And to be fair,
Well, I've done a lot.
You've done a lot.
I have done a lot.
What are they like? What is a sex scene like in a film?
Well, I've had a checkered career when it comes to sex scenes. My first one ever was...
at the Cheshire One Act Festival yes. in 1989.
In a production of Toad Hall. Me and Toad... No. My first one was with Stephen Fry in a film about Oscar Wilde.
Wilde?
And, yeah. And it was very romantic. There were billowing curtains. And I rode Stephen like a bucking bronco. That was my first taste, my first bite of the cherry. My second sex scene was with chocolate powder smeared all over my face, and I had to bark like a dog when I came. That was in a thing called Dirty Filthy Love, where I played a man with OCD and Tourette's. My first introduction to sex scenes was quite strange.
I said deep end.
And then, of course, once I started doing Masters of Sex, then it was a sort of daily occurrence. But then it became more about watching other people doing sex scenes, which was a strange thing.
Well, maybe you are really Alphonse, the voyeur.
Maybe I am. Maybe.
Not that we all went, we knew there was something about it. Yes.
That Belgian twang.
Yeah, maybe I am. Mm. Because it is weird to watch people doing it. Because on the one hand, you don't want to make them uncomfortable.
Of course.
And usually in our show, people come in just for a day, who would normally on the bill, God rest his soul, would have just come in and been, you know, someone getting into a fight or whatever in the background. In this, they come in and either just masturbate or have sex. And it's
not
weird.
The role. It's just in the
environment on set, yeah.
And so we try to make sure that they feel as comfortable as possible. So you sort of try not to look and all that kind of stuff. But then after a while, you just get used to it.
But surely you're not having real sex.
No, but it's, you know, it's...
Gets close.
It's near as damn it. Yeah.
Near as damn it. That's not a thing. Did you have sex? Near as damn it. So no.
In season one, there was a whole storyline about how I worked with prostitutes and they would all masturbate with a glass dildo, which is actually what happened in real life. And so all these actresses would have to, like, one after another, be in front of me pretending to simulate masturbation with a glass dildo. Now, there's only so much you can simulate up to a point. And then there was one young lady who, she decided to go, you have things called modesty patches. The ladies have modesty patches, the men have modesty pouches.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
This young lady decided that she was going to go without a modesty patch. But her scene involved her being on all fours, and me and Lizzie, who plays the other character, being sort of behind her.
Oh.
And, I mean, I could see daylight.
See the stars.
It's true.
You could see Belinda's cervix as a constellation.
I could. Wow. Orion's belt. And I remember at that point, because we always have a closed set, so there's a minimum amount of people in the room, you know.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, I remember looking at Lizzie and realizing, we're just filming porn. Yes. That's what this is. I could feel that everyone was very uncomfortable.
Because it's weirdly legitimised. Like, it's legit porn, which is even weirder, because it's like, we're all under this illusion that it's not, but it is.
Oh, yeah, I'd be nominated for a Golden Globe. This is legit. But I can still see Afghanistan in there. Full on.
Yeah. Wow. No matter how great a caliber of actors you've got, like Alison Janney, amazing, it's still porn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But what does the patch usually cover then? Because there you'd have to have, I imagined it like a plaster.
It's like, what do you call them?
Like a sanitary towel.
It's like a sanitary towel, yeah. And it goes all the way round. And so it's a sort of flesh-coloured, large sanitary towel.
Who's
with
making
a picture
those?
Of Bambi on it or whatever, The Simpsons or something. And then the men, we have a pouch, which is... And I'll tell you what's difficult about the pouch is that you're supposed to put your full set in.
Set?
And
then it's got many pieces are there?
Well, you know, you've got your cutlery and your knives and forks. You know.
And you've got your stones, of course.
And your stones. And your, what are the testicles of the hand. And you, and then it's got a drawstring on the pouch. So you have to get everything in and then you pull the drawstring.
Oh, Jesus.
And then it keeps it all locked
in
there.
It's like a medieval money
Exactly.
Container.
Like a little leathery medieval merchant's pouch.
Like the tax man would have. Exactly. For like gold coins.
Exactly.
Yeah, like the doubloons.
So you put your doubloons in there and your hose and your doubloon and you tie that up. And then that keeps it all safe and supposedly there. But what tends to happen over time is that your doubloons work their way out.
Oh, I bet.
So you've got your hose still in there, fastened in.
Everything's in different areas.
But your doubloons are just bouncing around.
Oh, wow.
That drawstring's not made.
I don't know why I've locked onto your eyes.
I've
can't look anywhere else. Yeah.
Suddenly there was no one else in the room. But yeah, so that's how the pouch works, or doesn't.
If I recall, I didn't ask, but thank you.
Have you ever been turned on by Belinda Blinked?
I can't say I have, to be honest. Not in the actual thing. In my reveries afterwards, perhaps, possibly.
In his rewriting of Belinda Blinked.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly. In my fan fiction that I write of it. That fan fiction is an extraordinary thing. Have people been doing that with this yet?
Yeah, we've had some. Right.
Have you had it for the show?
Yeah. Well, not so much for the show, there may be, but for Twilight.
Yeah, of course.
My daughter takes great pleasure in making me read the fan fiction that is specifically about me, my character, Arrow, and Jamie Campbell-Bower's character, Caius, just getting it on together.
Oh, wow.
So she thinks it's hilarious.
Yeah, well, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Because in this scenario, really, you're like, you're as Rocky is to Jamie.
No, but the other parallel, of course, is that my daughter has grown up. My dad is in a porno,
yeah.
Essentially.
Oh,
I mean, not that it is. It's not a porno, it's not. But as far as...
Do you want the viewers or not?
All right, it is a porno.
What are you doing here? Get your daughter in. We don't want you anymore.
She's going to do a podcast like this herself in years to come.
My dad's in a porno. Yeah. We've got a competition.
Did your father have something traumatic happen to him early on in his life? Did he accompany his mother to a gynecological exam of some kind?
What a question.
That's
specific. Is this
specific.
Your, like, small talk?
Yeah. Everything revolves around gynecological exam. No, but his mixing up of, like, sexy time and full-on medical stuff. He doesn't really seem to know where the line is, does he?
Granny doesn't know about...
I'm sorry to bring your granny into this, as if it could be any worse.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about it. No. My poor mother, she doesn't want to be dragged through all this. No. I mean, you know, it's 40 years of marriage.
Wilma has suffered enough.
Hasn't she?
It's torn the family apart.
Yeah, yeah.
I sometimes think, though, their neighbours and things like that, do their neighbours know?
Mm.
Well, Dad goes everywhere brandishing his business cards, so...
Rocky, have you got one?
I actually have one for you. He gave me one. He actually signed one for you.
Oh, has he signed one for anyone else?
A couple of people, like waiters and stuff.
Oh well then, that's fine.
So it's limited edition.
He like signs the check and he goes, I'll sign this as well. So here it is. This is for you. Have you seen one of these before?
No, I haven't.
There you go. So that is yours to keep.
Oh my goodness.
All of its contact details.
Oh, it really is.
You've got a direct line. Is.
Private number to the leather room.
For the benefit of the tape, he's just turned it over.
I turned it around, and there is the signature on a very lithe, young, I'm going to guess, female body.
She's very svelte, isn't she? A lot of rib on show.
Look at those pomegranates.
Look at those pomegranates. That's amazing. I'm going to get that laminated immediately. Oh.
Why? Why do you need it laminated?
Never you mind. I mean, I've spent the last couple of weeks just ogling grey whale's penis, to be honest.
It's a shocker, isn't
it? Oh,
I've
got a lot of running out of that. I just like to thrust a picture of it in someone's face and go, what's that? I'll give you three guesses, what's
three,
that?
Three, two, one, go.
And most people go, grey whale penis. They do.
Who are you hanging around with?
I know, it's terrible, isn't it?
It's such a great way of like bringing pervs out of the closet.
What is this? Grey whale penis. Have you listened to my dad wrote a porno? The other thing that I do to try and find out if people are, you know, dad wrote a porno, cool.
Yeah.
Is I'll whisper to them, my auntie is sick.
the famous secret password, was it to get into the brothel?
Yes. In Amsterdam.
And if they whisper back, and so are you.
And I know we're cool.
You get out the caviar, yeah. You grease up your lips. It's wild.
When I first started listening to it, it was during this season, this last season of Masters of Sex that I've been filming.
Oh, yeah.
Which I only finished last week. And so I would listen to it in my trailer of a morning, eating my breakfast, after I'd been in hair and makeup. So I'd be in character as Bill Masters, and I would sit there and listen to Belinda Blinked as I was eating my breakfast.
Wow.
Guffawing, spitting bacon and scrambled egg onto the mirror in front of me.
Any other converts on the set?
Yeah, I got I got Lizzie listening to it.
Great.
And then Lizzie and Tom Riley, her fiancé now.
Oh, congratulations.
They
guys.
Started listening to it when they went on this trip. When they had a bit of time off, and now they're massive converts to it as well.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for spreading the word. We don't owe you any money, do we?
No.
Okay, great.
No, I feel like an evangelist. Like it's like Paul going off and sending letters, epistles to the Corinthians. I feel like this is the beginning of a religion.
Someone tweeted the other day saying that they were on the tube and
What's that?
The tube.
What's that?
It's a big kind of cylinder that transports all the pets.
You've changed, Michael.
Yeah, let's try it something.
And he's the living end.
Isn't he just?
I came with a backpack, for God's sake.
And that wine was burning.
No, but this girl was on the tube, got to the clit hanger, kind of went, oh my God. Yeah. And the guy next to her tapped her on the shoulder and said, Jim Sterling, right?
No.
And she was like, yes. And they had a conversation about Belinda Blinked. So it's actually bringing people together in a really weird way.
God, it is like a religion. Like, there's a community.
How many do you need? Because on the census, wasn't Jedi a religion?
Is it 10,000, I think?
Only 10,000, isn't it?
10,000 Belinkers. You could be a high priest, Michael.
Oh, I could. I was born for it. My great-great-grandfather was a street preacher in Port Talbot. He was a waster, drinker, gambler. He was lying in the gutter one night, and God spoke to him through the moon and told him to mend his ways. And from then on, he became a street preacher.
Oh, my God.
Is that for real?
That's in my genes.
So you could stand on streets, just ringing a bell.
Yeah.
Well, anyone can do that, technically.
Of Belinda. Preaching the word of Flintstone. Escape into a world of pots and pans.
Of make-believe.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, thank you so, so much for swinging by and talking all things Belinda with us.
I want to thank you on behalf of myself and all the Belinkers.
Oh.
For this. It's so wonderful. You make me laugh so much, all of you. And it's so lovely to get to know you through the podcast and now to actually be
here. Yes.
It is as good as everyone imagines it would be out there. It is wonderful to be in the warmth of the welcome.
In Belinda's bosom.
In the bosom of Belinda. Oh, I dream of it.
It's
such
been
a pleasure.
A pleasure for us now. Fuck off.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.